daily Premier League news and views. This is Football Social Daily.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast from Sports Social, with a new episode 7 days a week. This is your one-stop shop when it comes to keeping on top of all the goings-on in the English top flight. So hit subscribe now, and that way you won't miss one. On today's show, we look ahead to Chelsea's trip to Brighton tonight after being bruised by Manchester City on Saturday and possibly folding in the title race. Can the Blues respond against a Brighton side whose manager Graham Potter is being linked with the vacant Everton job? In the other dugout, Thomas Tuchel has been named as FIFA's 2021 Men's Coach of the Year, along with five Premier League players in the Team of the Year. We'll go through those names and ask, do they deserve it? Plus, with just 12 days to go until the transfer window closes, we've got the latest gossip for you, including the potential for Christian Eriksen to return to the Premier League. I'm Niall McCorn, and all of that to come on today's Football Social Daily in the company of Sports Social's 2021 Burnley Basher of the Year, Marley Anderson, and Prawn Eater of the Year, Joel Tudor. Morning, boys.
I'll take that one.
You have to take it, Joel. Obviously, you'll be listening to this wondering, what on earth is Niall talking about, Prawn Eater of the Year? But me and Marley have noticed since Joel's joined the team, he seems to have a unique fondness for prawns. Every lunchtime, Marley, in the office,
yep. If
it's not a prawn sandwich, then something's gone wrong.
If it's not a prawn sandwich, he goes hungry.
Honestly, when I was 2 years old, I used to be taking prawns out of the shells on my little high chair. So, listen, I'm a man of culture.
Does that mean you're technically part of what's known as the Prawn Sandwich Brigade, Joel?
No, because I've been there since I was two. Like, listen, that wasn't a thing when I was 2 years old. I am part of the seafood culture.
We're talking of the seafood culture. We're going to talk about the Seagulls, because Brighton host Chelsea tonight in the Premier League. And actually, Chelsea as a club have been criticised for, you know, kind of engineering this prawn sandwich brigade kind of culture. But that's beyond the point. There was due to be two Premier League games tonight. Burnley against Watford was also set to take place this evening, but that has been postponed, regrettably, in quotation marks, by the Premier League, after Burnley allegedly only have 10 fit first team players available. Supposedly Charlie Taylor's gone down with injury now. Obviously, they've sold Chris Wood recently. They cannot fulfil the fixture. So that big relegation clash against Watford tonight has been postponed. So just the one game for us to focus on at the Amex. Brighton against Chelsea, 8 o'clock kickoff. Now, Chelsea were dealt a huge blow by Man City in the title race at the weekend, Joel. What do you think the mindset of the players will be now at Chelsea after that defeat on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I'm sure all of them will have been dealt with a huge psychological blow, because now they have to suddenly start looking below them rather than ahead of them. When you've got 13 points between the champions, who literally don't look like they're going to let off any steam at all whatsoever. They only conceded 13 goals as well, City, this season, which is ridiculous at this stage. And suddenly you've got West Ham, who are only 5 points away from them. You've got Arsenal, who've got two games in hand on them, which would take them points behind Chelsea. You've got Tottenham, who are four games in hand behind them, which would take them pretty much level with Chelsea. Manchester United have got two games in hand. So you can see that all the teams below them are really starting to gain pace on them now, which around 2 months ago, you would never have thought that would have been the case, considering they were really high up in the ranks and they looked like they were strong. But suddenly these, especially the draws, when you just look at, for example, Manchester City compared to Chelsea, the big thing that's apparent between the two is the amount of draws. And Chelsea, in a lot of games this season, they've just not been able to hold on and take the wins, whereas City have been absolutely ruthless. But I think obviously that's beneficial to how well their depth is compared to Chelsea's. But to be fair, Chelsea has got a great depth, but obviously they've been dealt with a lot of blows, with Lukaku being out and Jorginho and Kante being out, and them two in the midfield as a pivot are just kind of, they're like the bread and butter of the team, aren't they? When you don't have them in there, you really notice it. But I think when you look at the points tally now, City are gaining such a lead that it's not even just a lead on paper, it's like a psychological lead, where when City get to that 60 point mark, which will happen in the next two games, suddenly they just seem too far and out. And I think Liverpool are the only ones who can really start to at least keep tabs with them. But then obviously you've got Salah and Mane who are not there. So City are in an amazing position right now. And Chelsea I know Thomas Tuchel is going to rule out the title 100%, and you know what, rightly so. I said it at the start of the season, I didn't think Chelsea had it in them to continue a title race this year, and I think the best hope for them this year now is, you know, obviously try and defend the Champions League. I think they've got every chance of doing that. As we've seen in previous campaigns, you don't need to be the best team in the Europe to win it. You just need to be the one where the cards fall in, right in the right place at the right time. And I think, you know, they will probably go far in that competition. But right now, they're getting sucked well and deeply into that top four race. And I'm not surprised, to be honest, because the form's just been atrocious in the last month or so. They've just been dropping points in silly games.
You talk about Thomas Tuchel, and we'll speak about him in a bit more detail later on in the podcast, because Chelsea have absolutely cleaned up at the FIFA awards that took place last night. But as for what his focus will be now, Marley, Joel thinks it will be looking over the shoulder and solidifying themselves in the top four race. I think the gap between Chelsea and the rest of the chasing pack is quite significant. City, Liverpool and Chelsea are streets ahead. So for me, it feels like the top four is all but secure, barring a real capitulation. So the Champions League is another thing that Joel touched upon. Do you think that is it now? It's all about defending that Champions League crown, because even the most optimistic of Chelsea fan will probably admit that the title race is now over for them.
Yeah, I think so. I think the fact that they did it last year, probably against the odds, just, well, maybe against the odds, maybe, you know, because nobody expected them to win it last year. That's just given belief that they can beat anyone on the day. And if you can do that, but not stretch it out over a season, you know that you can go and win it again. You know, they've beaten everyone last year in the Champions League that they needed to beat and got to the final and beat the favourites Manchester City. So you're looking at that and saying, why can't we do that again? The thing now is that Man City have got such a sort of psychological thing over everyone, and Chelsea in particular as well now, because I think Tuchel started off beating Guardiola the first three times they played or something like that, and then he's not beat him since. And I think both games this season have gone City's way, if I remember rightly. And if they ever met in the Champions League, City would probably start favourites and confident again. So if they can avoid City, they'd probably back themselves against most other teams, because I think the three best teams in the world are probably all in the English Premier League at the minute, with maybe Bayern crashing that party with Man City and Liverpool as well. So it's one of them where you're out of the title race. I think now, 13 points with 16 games to go is just undoable when Man City have been so good. And also they're not struggling with African nations players going away like Chelsea are with their first choice goalkeeper. So that's pretty much gone. So it's a chance of, it's a case for me of looking at what other silverware you can get from this season. And they could still end up with the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup and the Champions League. So it's not really a written off season in total.
Yeah, imagine that, an off season and you still possibly win a treble. That would be some going. I mean, it's not a true treble, as people would say. You need the league for that. But to win three trophies in a season, I think the last time that was done, both domestic cups and a European cup, was Liverpool in 2001. So it's been a long time since that's been the case for an English side to do a treble of that sort. Still a long way to go, though, for Chelsea, mind you. Just quickly then, Marley, what do you think the reaction will be? Do you think we'll see a Chelsea that come out as a wounded animal, you know, and Brighton should be really fearful of them and they'll come out all guns a-blazing? Or do you think that it might go the other way and that Man City defeat would have really damaged them?
I think, to be honest, when Brighton, we say it a lot, you know, they play nice football and all possession-based and good to watch and whatever, but when they come up against a team that also does that, they tend to come out second best. And Chelsea do that, so I think Chelsea will have enough to get through. I think they are still a bit of a wounded animal. They won't want to be like, you know, we say they're out of the title race, but they won't just give up the chase sort of thing. They still want to finish above Liverpool. They'll still want to put as much distance between them and the top, them and fourth and fifth as possible, because they've all got games in hand coming up. Arsenal have got a couple of games in hand and can go 2 points behind them if they win both of those games. And you don't want a small gap coming into when the Champions League starts again, because you want to put your eggs in that basket a little bit more when the time comes. So it's about stretching that lead as much as possible now. And I think Chelsea will start that by beating Brighton tonight. As nice as Brighton play, they've not got the cutting edge to go and beat Chelsea, I don't think.
Talking of Brighton's style of play, Graham Potter's won plenty of plaudits for that, Joel. And Rafa Benitez, of course, as we discussed on the podcast already this week, has recently been sacked by Everton, and so the manager's post is vacant there at Goodison Park. Graham Potter's been linked with that position. He's also been linked with Spurs in the past. I think in the summer before Antonio Conte went into Tottenham, Graham Potter was one of the names bandied around. Just how good a job is he doing at Brighton, in your opinion? It must be a half-decent one if he's being linked with clubs that are, no disrespect to Brighton, but much bigger than them.
Well, I think he's been linked to absolutely every single club who's lost a manager this year. He seems to just fall into the hat like the Goblet of Fire a little bit, so pun intended with that one. And it's hard to know exactly what his level is, because obviously he's made Brighton into pretty much a top eight, top nine side after coming up from the Championship literally not long ago, really. And I think it's testament to the fact that I think Brighton gave him a 7-year contract, didn't they? Which shows just how much belief they had in him when they first hired him. I think was it Chris Hughton that ended up leaving them and he replaced them. So
yeah, and that new contract, Joel, was pretty much within the first, I think, 18 months of him having the Brighton job. So I think they were quite keen to get him on that new deal. But do you think there's a little bit of an insurance policy in that? It's not often you see managers get such a long deal. Do you think that part of that is because they probably understand that someone's going to come sniffing around him at some point because of the job he's done?
Yeah, clearly someone had some incredible foresight when they gave him that contract. I think the last one was Alan Pardew, was it? Not Marley.
And we know how that went. 8-year contract in 2012, that was, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the foresights were a little bit different in both cases, but a 7-year contract is quite unheard of. I think Diego Simeone is another one who had a 7-8-year contract with Atletico Madrid. So it's I think, like you said, it is good insurance policy. It would have been an absolute nightmare had it turned out the other way and they would have had to pay out a good significant chunk of that contract. But considering how good the recruitment is, obviously, you know, with Bissouma and Lamptey and all of these players who originally, when he first joined, you would never have expected them to reach the heights that they currently are, where they're being linked with, you know, Manchester United and Arsenal and all the other clubs. That's just testament to how good of a job he's doing. And I think sometimes in these situations, managers need to be careful that they don't fall victim to their own success. And what I mean by that is, if, for example, he ended up going to Everton, you know, he has a very good setup at Brighton. He's pretty much, he's ingrained his culture, his beliefs into it. His recruitment is pretty evident. If you go to a club like Everton, I don't know how much of a step up that actually is. Obviously, yeah.
If you were Potter now, would you leave for Everton?
No, I wouldn't. And that's just the reason. It's because, is it really a step up? I mean, you can look at the heritage of the clubs and whatever. And obviously at Everton are quite clearly the bigger club. But I mean, in terms of where they are at now and what Brighton are building, I mean, he's in a great position at the moment. And yeah.
The infrastructure, I think, is key as well, Joel. You know, you talk about what he's got at Brighton and the structure. You know, he gets on well with the chief executive. He understands all of the processes and things that are in place at Brighton. With Everton, it feels like they need a complete and utter restructure, which is going to take time. And as we've seen, the Everton fans maybe aren't quite as patient as they used to be. You said yes there, Marley. Can you just explain why, if you were Graham Potter, you would go to Goodison Park?
Bigger club, better players, more chance to do something in the game.
More cash,
yeah. I think he's hit a bit of a slight ceiling with Brighton. To be fair, I know that you know, like, they've come 15th and 14th and 17th in the previous years, and they're probably on course to finish around 10th, 11th this season, maybe even higher. But compared to what Everton could do if they got everything right, I think it's not as high a ceiling. Maybe one thing is the Everton job comes around every couple of years, so you might as well just bide your time, but it's around now. They've got money, they've got, like I say, they've got better players. Like, I look at Brighton and we always say they just struggle to score goals, to cap off their good play. Like, they're great between the boxes, and then in both boxes they're not good enough. I think Everton's players, if you look at Calvert-Lewin, and if they went and got another striker as well, I just think Everton could do way better than what Brighton can do. I think the ceiling's way higher. I think they could crash that top six or seven if everything went well. So it's something I would think about if I was him. But I think even yesterday he was asked in his pre-match press conference, and he said something like, "I'm at one of the best run clubs in the country," and that was a bit of a slight on Everton, because they ran like an absolute circus up there. So it's not really that tempting if you're a manager who's happy with what you're doing, like you know, he's got a 6-year contract left or whatever he is. It's not as tempting to go to a club, an obviously bigger club, which he's ran like an absolute shambles, that have sacked the head of recruitment, sacked the medical director, they've sacked their manager, and there's a couple of other places as well. The director of football's gone as well, so it's not as tempting. But as a club, I think it's a step up. Just maybe the timing isn't right. But managers are egotistical, so I think that he could be there and be like, "Well, I can sort this out." But to be fair, he doesn't seem like that type of character. He just seems to have his head screwed on a little bit more. So I don't blame him for staying. But if I was him, I'd be thinking about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's often why we see managers like Sean Dyche linked with bigger jobs. You know, Everton maybe is one of those clubs where you could have, in years gone by, seen Sean Dyche linked to it. But I think he's now kind of made his bed at Burnley, and he's set his stall out, and he's quite happy being the Burnley manager. And I feel similar about Graham Potter. That's just my opinion. Of course, his Brighton side host Chelsea tonight, 8 o'clock in the Premier League. And just building on Everton, as Potter has been linked to that vacant manager's role at Goodison Park, Everton have actually sounded out their old manager, Roberto Martinez, who managed the club for 3 years between 2013 and 2016. Currently the Belgian manager, the Belgian national team manager, they've sounded him out to replace Benitez, and supposedly the Belgian FA have refused permission for Martinez to talk to Everton. No real surprise, considering we are now in a World Cup year. That's it for the first part of Football Social Daily, and we'll be talking about the FIFA Team of the Year after this. There is some certain Premier League representation. We'll discuss it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Social Podcast Network.
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion Podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion Podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title running and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture, and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League show from Sports Social. If you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode of the podcast again. And our show is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. There are loads of great podcasts as part of the roster, and you can go and check them out on our website, sport-social.co.uk. When you get onto the homepage, click the podcast tab at the top of the screen, and that will take you to the full list of all the podcasts from a range of different sports, loads of different Premier League clubs with podcasts around them as well. So make sure you check that out. That's sport-social.co.uk. Or if you just want to search for any of the podcasts on the network, you can find them on your usual podcast provider. Time now to talk about the FIFA Team of the Year, which was revealed yesterday. There are 5 Premier League players involved, more than any other league in Europe. So let's go through the players. We're going for the traditional 3-3-4 formation, lads, in the Team of the Year. It's Donnarumma in goal, Diaz, Bonucci and Alaba as defenders. Conte, Jorginho, De Bruyne is the midfield. And the forward four is Haaland, Messi, Ronaldo and Lewandowski. Now, that is a decent team, but that's why it's a fantasy team. It's a Team of the Year. And as I mentioned, those 5 Premier League players involved are Ruben Dias from Man City, Kevin De Bruyne, also from Manchester City, Jorginho and Conte from Chelsea, and Cristiano Ronaldo of Manchester United. Out of those players that I've mentioned that play in the Premier League currently, Joel, who do you think is the most deserving of their place in that FIFA Team of the Year, which was announced last night?
Well, I think you'd have to give it to Jorginho. And that's purely because if a player wins the Euros and the Champions League, and he was pretty much a pivotal player in both of those competitions, I think he's had the year of his life, hasn't he, really? And obviously he finished third in the Ballon d'Or rankings. So him and, I would say, Kante for sure are the ones who are the absolute surefire ones. I'm pretty unsure with Kevin De Bruyne though. I'm not quite sure what he did in the last year to actually warrant himself in there, because he had a lot of injury issues as well. So I'm quite unsure how he's got his place in that. But I mean, that formation is quite formidable, isn't it? Four up top, they really stack the attack going forward. Just freestyle football, they don't care about if they get caught on the counter attack. But yeah, I don't know. These FIFA awards are a little bit dubious to me, especially after that made up striker award that they gave to Lewandowski as a bit of a consolation for losing out the Ballon d'Or ridiculously to Messi. But yeah, I would definitely say Jorginho. I think he's been far and out. He's a very old school type midfielder. He's very similar to how like Toni Kroos plays, in terms of he does the bread and butter stuff so well. And that's really underrated in football, and especially for Italy. I think he was one of the real pioneers in that midfield next to Barella and Verratti at times. So I think, yeah, he's well deserving of that. Not many players win a Champions League and European International Cup double, which is such a rarity. So yeah, I'd definitely say Jorginho.
What about you, Marley? Do you have a different opinion?
No, I think Jorginho's achievements can't really be overlooked. I think you can probably argue about whether he's as good as other players that aren't in the team, but you can't really argue with what he did in the year to warrant his place in the team. You can't argue about Messi and Ronaldo being in there, because neither of them are coming off the back of their best seasons. But I think, didn't Ronaldo win an award for like most goals or something? And
most international goals, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like they've probably thought, well, we can't leave him out of the main team, so how are we going to get him in? And then they've gone, sod it, we'll go 3-3-4, like some sort of like a child's been put in charge of making a formation. I'm pretty sure De Bruyne is only in there because they slightly picked him ahead and thought, no, we can't have five strikers, surely, like a 2-2-5 or a 3-2-5 or something like that. So yeah, I'd never pay much attention to these teams, because you never know what he's judged on, do you? So I mean, Kante's performances in the Champions League were stunning. I remember, I think he was man of the match in both quarterfinals, both semi-finals legs, and one of the best on the pitch in the final as well. So like, in terms of performances, I don't think anyone influenced more than Kante in the Champions League. But in terms of other things, I don't really have too much of a problem with anyone, to be honest, because it's more of an award for achievements rather than what you sort of produced on the pitch sometimes.
Yeah, I think for me, Ruben Dias would be my choice. I just think the impact he had on Manchester City, the season he had last year, City winning the Premier League title, the Carabao Cup, getting to the Champions League final, I think that was huge for Manchester City, him coming in and the impact he's made. So definitely agree with your cases for Jorginho, but I think Ruben Dias would just be my choice, just to kind of go for something slightly different. But yeah, five Premier League players in the FIFA Team of the Year, more than any other league in Europe, which is always a nice little boast for the Premier League. In terms of the Men's Coach of the Year award, that was won by Thomas Tuchel, Marley. Is that a deserved prize as well for you, do you think? Do you think Thomas Tuchel was the best coach in men's football in the year 2021?
Yeah, probably. When did he come into Chelsea? It was the start of 2021, wasn't it? So it's pretty much the whole year at Chelsea. So yeah, you couldn't really argue with that. From where they were, he took them on a pretty they weren't in the doldrums by any chance. I think people underestimate or sort of write off what Lampard did as if it was a massive crisis, but I don't think it was. But he still took them to a new level pretty much instantly as well. You know, he got them into the top sort of title race, almost. Like, wasn't much of a title race, obviously, but he got them sort of the best of the rest. And he backed it up with big wins over Guardiola, as I said before in the first part of the show. And he produced what he can. I think he's not at previous clubs, especially PSG, I don't think he was appreciated, because PSG have a hire and fire sort of culture at their club. So when he comes to Chelsea, once everyone's on the right page and everybody knows what he's trying to do, I think you've seen the rewards of it really quickly. And you've seen when a talented squad believes in the manager and the manager knows what to do with them, You see a team that can go and win the Champions League when people might not expect them to. And the one person you look at and say, is he better than Guardiola, for example? Last season, in 2021, he beat Guardiola in the league a couple of times, and then he beat them in the biggest game in club football in the Champions League final. So you can argue that that was down to Guardiola naming a strange team and the whole double pivot with Fernandinho and Rodri both playing, but that's not Tuchel's fault. He took advantage of that and won the game. So you can't really argue with anyone other than Thomas Tuchel taking the award, to be honest.
I think I'm right in thinking that Chelsea beat Man City in the FA Cup semi-final as well. They obviously went on to lose to Leicester, but yeah. You're right, Marley, they got the better of City on a number of occasions. I think the tables have somewhat turned now with the two league games that we've seen this campaign in the Premier League. But Thomas Tuchel was awarded the Men's Coach of the Year. Chelsea double when it comes to managers because Emma Hayes, the manager of Chelsea Women, won the Women's Award for Best Coach of the Year. And the goalkeeper, Edouard Mendy, won the Goalkeeper Award, the Best Goalkeeper of 2021. So, as I said before, lots of Chelsea here, Joel. They're absolutely cleaning up. Do you think that shows how impressed those outside of the Premier League have been with Chelsea and how they've kind of come through in the last 12 months?
Yeah, definitely in the first 6 months from when Lampard got sacked, obviously Tuchel's done a great job. But for me, I think, you know, obviously when you look back at like 2012 when they won the Champions League under Roberto Di Matteo, I don't think he would have ended up getting the Manager of the Year. I think it was Vicente Del Bosque who got that when he won the European Cup with Spain. So for me, it probably would have been Roberto Mancini to win that. And that's purely just because it's been such a long time that Italy had won the European Championships. And the fact that they truly were the best team at the competition, bar none, when not many people expected it prior to the tournament. I don't think they were even in the top three people's lists of teams to win it. And, you know, he pretty much did it in England to win it. So I think for me, he would have been my pick. But yeah, you definitely can't underestimate how good of a 6 months it was for Chelsea in terms of the transformation. Because under Frank Lampard, when he actually got sacked, it was looking pretty bleak. But the only difference was is that he left an amazing crop of players that everyone knew would end up going on to do big things. Because I think in that summer, he spent a good 150 million on the likes of like Kai Havertz and Ziyech and many others, which added up to be a pretty decent amount. And now they're all flourishing like amazingly under Thomas Tuchel. And obviously Kai Havertz was the guy who ended up putting the ball in the net to actually give Tuchel the European Cup. So it shouldn't be underestimated that Tuchel did have an amazing crop of players to come into. It wasn't like he was coming into an absolute shambles of a club which didn't have any direction. He had an amazingly talented group. But no, I definitely think for me it would have been Roberto Mancini to win that.
Obviously, Italy beating England in the final of the Euros, an understandable shout for Roberto Mancini. And just to round off the Premier League representation at those FIFA awards last night, the Puskás Award, which is given for the best strike of the year, was awarded to Eric Lamela for his Rabona effort in the North London derby, which I totally forgot about. So I don't know whether that's me not being impressed by the goal, Marley, or whether it wasn't worthy to win the strike of 2021. But I remember Yuri Tielemans' FA Cup final goal at Wembley from 30 yards into the top corner, past the best goalkeeper in the Premier League at the time, Mendy, who's just won the award, the underdog side winning it. For me, that was the best goal, but you can see why Lamela's cheeky strike has won the award.
You can, yeah. It was a hell of a strike. I mean, 99 players would have took it on the right foot, but because Eric Lamela was born with two feet, but only one of them was for shooting with, the other one he's purely for standing on, he thinks, ah, sod it, Rabona. And he's just, it's a great goal, to be fair. It takes some technique and some power, but it's not the first one he scored. I remember one in the Europa League a couple of years ago when he did it on the run, and he managed to score for, I think it's about 20 yards as well. So he put a fair bit of power into it. But so it's not the first time he's done it. Obviously in the North London derby as well, it was a big game and all the rest of it. So you can't really argue with it, I don't think. But yeah, there was a few decent goals. And if I was Tielemans, I'd be saying, well, he's just used his good foot there. He should have took a swing on his right foot and proved that he's got one.
Lamela wins the Puskás Award for the best striker 2021. Thomas Tuchel, the best men's coach of the year. Edouard Mendy, the best goalkeeper of 2021. So Chelsea really cleaning up in those FIFA awards last night. Will they make tonight exciting for themselves as well by beating Brighton? But we're going to leave Chelsea to one side. This is Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast, and it is the Premier League transfer window at the moment. We'll talk about all the latest gossip next after this.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social. I'm Niall. Marley and Joel are alongside me, and we're going to talk about the latest Premier League transfer gossip now. And the big news that came overnight is that Brentford have spoken to Christian Eriksen about a potential six-month deal at the Brentford Community Stadium. He left Inter Milan in the summer. His departure from Milan was largely due to the medical emergency he endured at the Euros, of course. He collapsed and he was brilliantly rallied around by his teammates, and his life was saved by some quick thinking by the medical team and doctors on the pitch that day. And those medical personnel were recognised last night at the FIFA Awards, which was brilliant to see, as well as the Denmark national team. But he's been without a club for the first 6 months of 2021. And now as we head into 2022, he could be offered an opportunity by a club with a strong Danish contingent. Brentford, of course, managed by a Dane in Thomas Frank. They've got links to FC Midtjylland, which are a Danish club. And Christian Eriksen has allegedly been sounded out, Marley, about a potential six-month deal in the Premier League. Now, this is a bit of a surprise one, but he knows London, having formerly played for Spurs. He hasn't really had any other offers. And it's a bit of an opportunity for him to come and kind of re-establish himself as a top player again.
It is, yeah. I think this whole transfer from all sides makes sense. As you say, you know, there's a culture there of Danish players and you know, the manager's Danish. There's players like Dalsgaard and Roeslev, and if there's a few, there's even a couple of Swedes in there as well. So it's like a little mini Scandinavia down in Brentford. There's a few, so I think 6 months is something to just ease you back into the game. Like, he's not played since that game in the Euros, so you're talking, what, like six or 7 months now? So he needs a new challenge, but I think people are forgetting what a good player he is. And I think people are thinking, when they think of Christian Eriksen, they think, oh, he's had a heart attack, like he's going to drop down again any minute now. And it's like, he's not. It's just it was a freak thing. And you've got to put your trust in the medical services that he's fit enough to play again. And he'll go through an insane amount of medical tests to make sure that doesn't happen again. I don't know if he has been fitted with the heart device. I think he has. And that's why he can't play in Italy, because they've got a rule where you're not allowed to play if you've got a sort of pacemaker type device fitted. But the Premier League, you are allowed that. So I think you've got to then start judging Christian Eriksen on, is he still a good enough player? And I think the answer to that is a resounding yes, because he would improve Brentford. He'd give them a perfect lift at a time of the season where you just need to see it through, because they're doing good work. You know, they're not in the relegation fight, and they never really have been. But we sometimes see with newly promoted teams, they get a bit complacent towards the end of the season because they think the job's done. Not saying they will do that, we don't know, but bringing in a player of Christian Eriksen's quality would certainly sort of strengthen that squad to the point where they could see it out, and they could even finish in and around the sort of mid-table top 10 positions if everything goes well for them. So it's I think it's a good move for everyone, because Eriksen gets football, gets to play his way back into some confidence and some proper fitness. Brentford get a nice little boost, and they get a quality player out of it. So I don't see any sort of downsides to this.
Well, we'll watch this one with interest. Brentford have spoken to Christian Eriksen about a possible six-month deal, but there's a long way to go in that one, supposedly. Let's move on now and talk about this story that comes from The Telegraph this morning, Joel. This one on the back pages, and it's to do with your team, Manchester United. They're supposedly interested in Aston Villa midfielder John McGinn. Is that the sort of player with the tenacity and the bite required to play in the Manchester United midfield at the moment? Is this an acquisition that you would welcome if it goes ahead?
I've always liked him. I think many more Manchester United fans would like him if he was called Miguinho and he had a 30 mil clause playing for Leipzig, but he doesn't. He plays for Aston Villa in the Midlands and he's called John McGinn. So I don't think he's very favourable just purely on that aspect alone. Obviously he's 27.
Man U's midfielder be called the McField with McGinn and McTominay.
Oh, I don't want another McField flipping. That gives me nightmares enough as it is. But no, I think I do like him. I think he's a really good player. He's 27 and he's pretty much approaching his peak now. And he's the only thing that I would be cautious about is the fact that he's such a vital player to the Aston Villa side. And now that Steven Gerrard's the manager, I'm sure they'll be charging well over 40 million for him, an absolute minimum. And to be honest, I just feel as though we need someone, especially a holding midfielder, who's just of top quality. I'm not saying he's top quality, but I mean, I feel as though he's right for that Aston Villa side. He has everything around him which allows him to tick in terms of Douglas Luiz next to him. And in terms of the way they play, I'm not sure he'd be the right fit for our midfield, just because we don't have amazing quality in terms of in midfield around him at the moment. And for me, if it was my pick, I'd go for Tchouaméni from Monaco, just because he's super young at the moment and he just looks like the type of tall, bread and butter type. Jorginho, that's what we need. We need a kind of Tony Kroos type player who can just literally not give the ball away for 90 minutes. Because if you think about it, we haven't replaced Michael Carrick since he left, and that was in, 2013? And since then, the club have probably wasted a good 150 million to 200 million trying to find these gap start players in terms of like Morgan Schneiderlin, a finished Bastian Schweinsteiger, and they just didn't work. So we need to go back to the drawing board, and you know what? If McGinn could be got for a good amount in terms of like market value and not what the value is to Aston Villa, then I think I would absolutely do it, because I think he's a really good player, but it's just not the way it's going to go, and he's too important to Aston Villa for them to let him go for any less than what they want, because he's going to be difficult to replace. He's a vital player for them, so I don't think it's an, I think it's a non-starter, just because they're going to be wanting a lot, and you know, they're well within the rights. The same with Grealish. He's not worth 100 million, but to them he was.
I think it's interesting you mentioned what the value is to Aston Villa, because let's just suppose, Marley, that this report from the Telegraph is true and that Manchester United do want John McGinn. Will Steven Gerrard, the Villa manager, do business with Manchester United? Because there were reports recently that he almost exiled Axel Tuanzebe, who was on loan at Villa Park, from Manchester United. And Tuanzebe has since had to go back to Manchester United and be loaned elsewhere. He's now on loan over in Italy. So do you think Steven Gerrard will do business with Manchester United, or do you think he'll completely rule out any potential of dealing with them?
I think that if Steven Gerrard managed to get £50 million, just let's say, for John McGinn to Man United, there's only one winner in that deal, and it's Aston Villa. Because, what you know, yeah, it's selling to Man United, but John McGinn's not good enough to play for Man United. I'm sorry, but he's just not. He's not good enough to turn Man United from an also ran into a title challenger. They've got the money to get a better player. I think 50 million, for example, if you were John McGinn, I think that was the fee that was linked with him when these rumours first came around about a year ago. So if it's a similar fee, then you're looking at 50 million for McGinn, and all I'm thinking is how much would Wolves want for Ruben Neves, and how much would Leicester want for Yuri Tielemans, and how much would Leicester want for Wilfred Ndidi? Because any of those three players, if Man United could go out and sign any of those, two of those three players, I think they become a much, much, much better team. As in, I think they could push for the title if they got everything sorted out in that department. But John McGinn, look, I like John McGinn. I like that he's technically a decent player. He's got good energy and good bite, and sometimes you need that in midfield, and well, a lot of the time you need that in midfield, but in terms of quality, he's not good enough to play for Man United. And I think if Man United fans are looking and going, yeah, we need John McGinn in our midfield, I think that's a sign of how low expectations are at Old Trafford these days, because he's not good enough for them. at all.
Do you think Steven Gerrard would even sell him?
Oh,
50 million.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you sell, you know, if you sell someone for stupid money, then yeah, then I think he would. Because look, money talks at the end of the day. And I think Gerrard would be like, well, 50 million. Who could I get for 50 million? He's probably got a list of transfer targets he wants. So could he probably get someone else for 20 million that could replace McGinn, and then you got 30 million in the bank? So I think he would. I also don't believe these Twanzebe rumours at all, because Twanzebe was never in the Aston Villa team ever. So his brother coming out with the whole Steven Gerrard didn't play my brother because he used to play for Man United and he was on loan from Man United is a load of balls, to be honest. But yeah, I think if you pull your rival's pants down in the transfer market, I think that's as much of a win. That's more of a win than just not selling to them in the first place.
Well, that's an interesting one for sure, in terms of whether John McGinn will be on the move. He's certainly someone who's performed really well for Aston Villa. But those are the thoughts of Marley and Joel. And Marley, you mentioned about having money and money talking. This is a really interesting story to do with Eden Hazard. The Catalan newspaper El Nacional have reported that Real Madrid have had a 50 million euro bid, which is 40 million initial fee plus 10 in add-ons, from Newcastle United. They've accepted. So Hazard himself has allegedly turned down the chance to sign for Newcastle United, but the bid of 50 million was accepted from Newcastle by Real Madrid for his signature, but the player has decided he doesn't want to leave Real Madrid. Allegedly, his wages and performances are annoying Florentino Perez, who's the Real Madrid president. What do you make of this one? Because it's just another name on a long list of names that have been linked with your club. But this one is suggested that, you know, Real Madrid were really keen to get rid of Hazard, and he could be available for 50 million.
I don't believe it. I don't buy into it at all. But if it was true, I don't really get it. Like 40 or 50 million. I think from what I've heard that Real Madrid are desperate to get rid of him. So why do you need to spend that much on him? Is that what they still want for him? Because I mean, they got 80. They signed him for 80, and he's barely played a game for them. Really, he's spent best part of 2 years injured. I don't think you can charge anywhere between 40 and 50. I know, like money talks with, and Newcastle have got loads of it to burn. But Spanish media is something I've never been able to. I've never looked at Spanish media and gone, I trust that one, because they're usually right. I think they're all as bad as each other out that with filling column inches and e-space, because it's just I just think it's Hazard looks to be coming to the end of his Real Madrid career. There's talks of Ancelotti not getting on with him, Perez not liking him, and he's still one of the top earners at the club. So I think it's a case of he's for sale and they've got money, so let's put them together. But I can't see us going out and trying to sign Hazard now in this in a relegation battle, because you're just never going to convince him. Maybe in the summer when you can say, look, we've got we're in the Premier League if we are, and we're putting these plans in process. Do you want to be part of it? But not in January. It's never really going to work, is it?
Newcastle have supposedly gone for those big hitters, Joel, and we've mentioned this before, because they've been linked with every top player really in Europe, and that's the case because I don't think anyone really knows what's going on behind the scenes at Newcastle United. Do you think that these are the sorts of players that Newcastle are going to be angling for, or do you think that, as Marley says, it's just trying to fill that column space? Because we've seen players like Chris Wood and Kieran Trippier both go to Newcastle United. Players of differing quality, in my opinion. And also James Tarkowski has been linked from Burnley as well in the last few days. And James Tarkowski is a very different proposition to Eden Hazard. So is it somewhat closing your eyes and throwing a dart and seeing where it lands when it comes to predicting who Newcastle are going to sign? Because it feels like even those involved in Newcastle in the local press aren't 100% sure what sort of player Newcastle might land.
Yeah, it's the easiest route to clicks, isn't it, really? I mean, I remember when Manchester City first got took over and they were getting linked to, you know, Kaká and Benzema and literally every single new hot prospect that was on the market, their name would be next to them somewhere not very far away. But obviously, in terms of Eden Hazard, I mean, like, obviously no disrespect to Newcastle, but Eden Hazard is not going to drop down from probably the biggest club in the world to a team that's at the bottom of the Premier League fighting relegation. I mean, the guy's been playing top level for all his career, and I don't believe for one second that he would even think about having to contend with a relegation battle, considering the heights he's reached. I don't believe he's finished, but I think he's 100% past his peak, and I'm so surprised that how... I'm surprised in terms of the downfall, but I'm not surprised in terms of how his Real Madrid career has gone, because some of the greatest players have gone to Real Madrid, like Kaká's one of them, who was a Ballon d'Or winner prior to his move to Real Madrid, and he was nowhere near the player he was at AC Milan, and he's been countless examples of that. And Hazard's just another victim of it. I feel like you just have to have a certain type of ego and a certain type of superstardom to you to actually make it at that club, and he doesn't fit the mold of a kind of Galactico style player, in my opinion. But I think with Real Madrid, and I know for sure that this summer's going to be a massive transitional period for them, because nearly all of that old crop of Madrid team that won the 3 or 4 Champions Leagues on the trot, they've pretty much all been eased out now. Obviously Ramos and Varane left last summer, then you've got Marcelo who will be leaving, Gareth Bale's contract's up, Carvajal may be leaving in the summer, so they're gonna have a huge summer this year, and I think they're just desperately trying to either drum up a little bit of interest and awareness for some of their outcasts, but at the same time it's the Spanish press using Newcastle's money and news and story around it to try and create a story that just never was, because I don't believe for one second that a bid has been accepted under the table. The English press haven't heard about it at all, but they've managed to decline it all in that time. It makes no sense to me. it's one of the worst, best kept secrets I've heard.
There's still 12 days left of the transfer window, and I can't wait until the end of January, because then we don't have to talk about Newcastle United signing anyone for another 6 months at the very least, until this summer.
Might be a year, yeah.
if I see that El Chiringuito tit talking about Newcastle United, that old bloke off the Spanish press, I'll chuck my laptop through the window.
Don't do that. We could do with your laptop being in good working order for the social media channels, of course, on Sports Social, at the Sports Social on Twitter, at Sports Social Official on Instagram, and on Facebook, if you type into the search bar Sports Social, you'll be able to find our page there, and we'll keep you up to date with any of the latest transfer news when it comes to Newcastle United. If there's anything confirmed, you'll be able to hear about it on our social media pages and on our website, sport-social.co.uk. Just before we go, Marley, if you could pick one signing that you could make realistically for your club between now and the end of the window at the end of the month, who would you go for?
Put me on the spot there.
It's got to be realistic.
It's got to be real. Rules out Haaland then. It needs to be a centre back, so I'd probably pick Sven Botman.
Interesting choice. Those are the thoughts of Marley and Joel on today's Football Social Daily. We'll be back again tomorrow with another podcast. We are the only show with a brand new podcast every single day of the Premier League season. But for today, that's it. And we'll speak to you next time on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.